Chapter 8. Ethan Farley looked like an escapee from American Gothic. He was bald-headed, sported wire-rimmed glasses, and wore denim bib overalls. All he needed was a pitchfork and a drab wife by his side. Emily, his drab wife, was dead 7 years now, and there wasn't much need of a pitchfork in paradise. Farley's family went back as far as the Salter family, and their relationship to the Salters had remained pretty constant over the last century. Plus, the Salters were rich, and the Farleys worked for them. Until the boys returned from WW2, the Farleys worked both inside and outside the Salter family houses in Paradise, Boston, and on Martha's Vineyard. But come the late 40s, the Salters realized they were nearly halfway through the new century, and that they ought to begin acting like the Gilded Age had actually come to an end. Ethan's folks and his Uncle Harold and his Aunt Ruella were the last Farleys to work as house servants for the Salters. Good thing, too, as far as Ethan was concerned. He had never wanted to wear a fancy suit a day in his life, and was happy to grow things and fix others. Dirty hands and a wet brow were the measures of a good man. He hadn't planned on checking on the Paradise House that day, but the storm had lasted for nearly 36 hours. Farley wasn't worried about the brick structure of the old place. It was as solid a house as had ever been built. But the stone foundation did spring the occasional leak in bad weather, and parts of the roof were susceptible to powerful gusts. He'd found over the years that water damage was best dealt with quickly. All those solid wood floors and all that plaster and lath were bad news to deal with when water got in and was left to its own devices. As Ethan drove up to the noble brick house on the bluff, he got a bad feeling in the marrow of his old bones. You work on a house long enough, you get connected to it. You can read it, feel its distress like a father feels his child's pain. And something was definitely amiss. Christ, he hoped it wasn't anything major. With the way the Salters had shifted their focus away from Paradise, he feared they might just sell the place if the damage was too bad. He wasn't in fear of his livelihood. No, the Salters were good that way. He had been well compensated for his loyalty to the family, and wouldn't want for much as long as he kept it simple. Simple was all he knew. What he worried about was keeping busy if the Salters sold the old house. Then he spotted the bright red Toyota Scion FRS parked in the drive and smiled. He didn't know the Salter kids the way he used to, but Ethan would have laid odds that the little Japanese sports car belonged to Harlan IV's youngest, Ben. Ethan liked Ben. A college student down in Boston, he was a polite boy, not as full of himself and his money as his two older brothers. Good or not, boys would be boys, Ethan thought. He had witnessed generations of Salter men bringing their women to the house in the off-season for a bit of privacy. Ethan parked his Ford F-150 right behind the kid's red machine and walked to the perimeter of the house. It didn't look worse for wear, but morning was just now breaking, and the light wasn't the best. Still, experience had taught him that things could look fine from the outside and be pretty bad on the inside. Ethan didn't want to walk in on the kid, so he stood on his pickup's horn and gave two long warning blasts to Ben that he and his female companion were no longer alone. After the second blast, he gave the lovers a few more minutes to get some clothes on. It wasn't until Ethan placed his hand on the brass thumb latch on the big front door that his smile ran away from his face. The door was unlocked. As he opened the door and walked into the front hallway, he called the kid's name. The echo of his own voice was Ethan's only answer. As he climbed the stairs, he detected a faint, unwelcome odor. At the top of the stairs, the odor was stronger, and he noticed a light coming from one of the small second-floor bedrooms. He called Ben's name again. No reply. As he approached the bedroom, Ethan saw that the door was nearly off its hinges, and that the odor was definitely coming from that room. When he stepped into the bedroom and saw Martina Penworth's nude, dead body sprawled face first on the floor beside the bed, it was all he could do not to heave up his breakfast. He didn't make it very far out of the bedroom before he did. It was only several minutes later that he had collected himself enough to call the police.